Hello! Welcome to the second episode of the short lecture series on family violence and crime. I'm Dr. Hasan Büker. In this episode, we talk about intimate partner and relationship violence. Before starting to discuss various aspects of the topic, I want you to think for a moment about what people usually expect from an intimate partner and relationship. I suppose most of you think love is a driving force behind a relationship, loving and being loved, maybe one of the most intense emotions for many of us. Then how come a relationship that starts with such a strong feeling for someone turns to be abusive and traumatic experience for some people? We will explore this question in further detail in this episode. Intimate partner is a person with whom one has a close personal relationship. The term includes a person with emotional connectedness, regular contact, physical contact, and/or sexual behavior, identity as a couple or familiarity, and knowledge about each other's lives. Please note, an intimate partner relationship need not involve all of these factors. It might involve only one or more of those. Generally, intimate partner relationships include current or former spouses, boyfriends or girlfriends, dating partners, or sexual partners. The relationship may occur between heterosexual or same-sex couples and doesn't necessarily require sexual intimacy. So we have a broad understanding of intimate relationships when we are examining this very problem. It's a type of violence committed by a spouse, ex-spouse, or current or former boyfriend or girlfriend. It's often a repeated offense, it's not a one-time interpersonal violence. It can happen to both men and women, but the literature indicates that women within heterosexual or same-sex couples are much more likely than men to suffer physical and probably psychological injuries from intimate partner violence. It's important to note that it's not a rare problem. Studies indicate that more than one in three women and nearly one-third of men in the United States have experienced rape, physical violence, and/or stalking by an intimate partner in their lifetime. Please pay attention to the closeness of those rates. Even if we know the majority of victims are women, we know men can also be victimized from intimate partner violence. And this chapter examines the dynamics of this very problem from different angles. So first of all, it's important to understand that the problem has roots in history. Your textbooks explains that in detail, but there is one significant term that you should remember in connection with that historical perspective, and it's a quote-unquote rule of thumb. And many victim advocates, researchers, and professionals have commonly accepted without question that in early England and America, a man might legally beat his wife so long as he used a stick that was no thicker than his thumb. So this is how we ended up using this term, even today, referring back to that historical fact about how violence against a woman was commonly accepted even in a legal setting. And today, in some other countries, in some societies, this might even have implications, and violence or various types of violence against a partner might not be considered as a crime. And as I have mentioned at the beginning, this type of violence doesn't have to be among heterosexual couples, but it can be against or within the same-sex partnerships. And while mostly we pay attention to that problem within that conventional context of family or partnerships, we believe that it occurs in LGBTQ communities with similar or greater frequency and severity. And the victims in those types of relationships can also be abused. For instance, they can be hit, controlled, or forced to have sex. And in addition to issues faced by the victims of intimate partner violence in an heterosexual relationship, those people who experience partnership violence in same-sex relationships have additional issues, like fear of being outed as gay. And they might be thinking a person has to be married for their experiences to be validated as domestic violence. Or they might be concerned that people who should help, like police officers or social workers, might discriminate against them based on their sexual orientation. So the problem becomes much more complicated if it occurs in a same-sex partnership. And the abusers in that kind of relationships might do so to gain and maintain control or avoid feelings of loss and abandonment, just like the perpetrators in heterosexual relationships. So the problem in both types of relationships, in both same-sex relationships or heterosexual relationships, have similar characteristics or similar outcomes. And to date, various theoretical perspectives have been developed to explain partner abuse, but no one has yet come forward with a definitive answer to the question of why people in a relationship abuse each other. And in different professions, people studying this topic came up with the various reasons or causes for this type of abuse. And that includes social stress, power, dependency, alcohol, marriage, so on and so forth. For instance, in terms of social stress, the theories accept that a family is a group of persons who cohabit. And marriage, even if marriage is not a requirement in that type of a context, in a living arrangement, which constitutes the family, forces converge to cause stress. And this increased level of stress, in turn, leads to a high rate of violence within the family. Many times, this violence is directed at the spouse in the form of physical assault, and it should be pointed out that stress doesn't cause violence. Instead, violence is one of the many responses available to persons who suffer from stress. But maybe one of the commonly accepted explanations for intimate partner violence is it's related to power and control. And power is the ability to impose one's will on another and make life decisions. Couples who share power or are equals in the decision-making process have the lowest level of both conflict and violence. When a conflict arises, these families display the greatest resistance to the use of violence. As indicated in the previous chapter, one of the characteristics of family violence is the use and abuse of that power. In addition, battered partners report a feeling of powerlessness as a result of the partner abuse they have suffered. So what we know for sure today is power and control is the dynamics, one of the important dynamics in that complicated problem. And dependency is another common explanation for intimate partner violence. And as we previously indicated, our society has fostered women's dependency. Women's financial and social success in many instances has been dependent on the men they marry. Although this is beginning to change, the glass ceiling still remains for the most part, and it's a kind of impenetrable barrier. And later on, we will discuss more about glass ceiling, which basically refers to that unseen but effective barrier for women to improve in their social roles. And the meaning of marital dependency in general is subject to debate. There are various perspectives and explanations about that, but the most common meaning includes economic dependency. The female spouse often has a lower or no earning power, and she is therefore dependent on her male partner for the necessities of life. And marital dependency is not only about this financial dependency or economic dependency, but it's a multifaceted concept, and it might also be involving emotional or societal factors that result in a woman being dependent on her spouse for support. And this dependency on a man and marriage for economic, emotional, and other support increases a woman's tolerance for physical abuse. That's one of the most common or commonly accepted explanation for why victims may not easily leave an abusive relationship. Alcohol is another theoretical explanation, and the relationship between alcohol and abuse has been studied extensively, and several theories have been formed regarding alcohol and its relationship to violence. And these theories discuss alcohol's impact on this disinhibition. And it's based on the principle that alcohol releases inhibitions and alters judgment. Medical evidence regarding the effects of alcohol on the central nervous system supports this perspective. Or alcohol might be related to social learning and deviance. And the scholars supporting this perspective suggested that individuals use alcohol to increase their sense of power and as an excuse for the exercise of unlawful force against others. And marriage can be another explanation for intimate partner violence. Some people believe, quote unquote, the marriage license as a hitting license. And the reason is that the common law tradition, as we previously discussed about the rule of thumb, traditionally allowed a husband to discipline his wife and accepted that within that legal perspective. However, more recent studies indicate that the highest rate and the greatest severity of assault is among cohabitating couples, not among married couples. Or we know the most severe types of violence among partners occur during the separation, not when the marriage is going on. And another aspect or another important question in this discussion is about the characteristics of partner abuse. And there are different dynamics or characteristics that can predict the probability of partner abuse. And those factors or characteristics include traumatic bonding, psychological entrapment, social isolation, economic stress, alcohol abuse, power imbalance, and intergenerational transmission. And all of those factors have some merit in explaining the causes of intimate partner violence. And in most of the times, those factors occur along with each other. And they are usually not acting alone, but they interact with each other, they trigger each other, or they exacerbate the impact of one another. So it's important to understand each of them separately, but it's also important to note that they are not standalone causes or characteristics of partner abuse. Another important question is, who is the abuser? Is there a way to identify who is going to be more likely to abuse a partner? So if we can answer that question, we might warn people to avoid from that kind of people and not be victimized in a relationship. For instance, we ask, why does he hit her? Is the partner abuser some sort of sadistic or overbearing bully? Is he a person who enjoys inflicting pain? Did she drive him over the edge and cause him to react in the only way he knows how? These and similar other questions are often asked by people when they first hear about partner abuse. Unfortunately, there's not a typical abuser. They all come from various backgrounds. They all come from various socioeconomical backgrounds or educational backgrounds or racial, ethnic backgrounds or religious backgrounds. So there is not one typical abuser. But there are some common background characteristics of those people who are more likely to abuse their partners. For instance, those people are more likely to be exposed to violence in their family of origin, especially if men observe their father abusing his mother, then he is going to be more likely to mimic the same behavior against his spouse. And you know, another important characteristic is the low self-esteem and the sexual role as identified by the society. Lack of self-identity on the part of the male may be associated with partner abuse. We know those people have some verbal skills deficiencies. They show some signs of psychopathology. They tend to have alcohol or drug abuse problems. And they, most of the times, they have low self-esteem or personality disorders in various formats. And there are various dynamics of that violent relationship. And in the recent years, you might have also heard that people often ask why the victim stays in an abusive relationship. Think about that for a moment and try to see or try to think about an example you might know of. Why do you think the victims stay in an abusive relationship? You might have think about various reasons, but usually, again, just like the factors contributing to that problem, the reasons for women, especially women, to stay in an abusive relationship is much more complex than you might think of. It's multifaceted, and there are various theories attempting to explain the dynamics of that abusive cycle. And the theory, which is well known in this respect, is coined by Lenora Walker, and it's known as the cycle theory of violence. And this theory has three distinct phases. According to that theory, the first phase is the tension building phase, the explosion or acute battering. And the phase, the next phase is the calm, loving respite phase. And these phases can vary in length and intensity depending on the relationship. But what we know is in that cycle, or breaking this cycle, is really not simple for a partner to go out of that abusive relationship, because they come after one another. And the previous cycle or the next cycle usually heals the problems caused in the previous cycle. So in the first phase, for instance, there's that tension building in most of the times where there is not, for instance, a physical act against the partner, but the tension is increasing between the partners. And the second or actual phase is when the acute battering happens, actual violence happens. And during that violence, you know, in most of the times, victims are not really capable of comprehending the problem or understanding what's going on because of the shock or because of the intensity of the inflicted pain. And the third phase is when the victims are, or the perpetrators, both are calming down, and there's that loving respite usually coming from the perpetrator. And later on, the cycle goes back to the initial phase, and there's that tension building starting again. There's that explosion, and later on again, the third phase, the cycle goes on, and the victims usually cannot get out of that abusive relationship. Another term you might have heard or you should learn is, again, quote unquote, is the battered woman syndrome. And it's a pattern of psychological symptoms that develop after someone has lived in a battering relationship. And it's a gradual process of conditioning in which the victim feels both helpless and hopeless. And according to Walker, who coined that, that cycle of violence theory, one of the main reasons why spouses stay in these situations longer than people would expect is based on that syndrome, battered woman syndrome. And another term you should learn within that discussion is known as the Stockholm syndrome. And this occurs when persons who are held hostages, captives, or prisoners of war begin to identify with their captors. And the same thing can be applied to an intimate partnership in which a spouse is battering or acting violently against the other one. And victims start to become helpless and start to, because of that isolation or mistreatment and fear, they start to feel closer to the perpetrator. That's what basically Stockholm syndrome is. And along with those, we also need to know what types of violence might occur within the description of partner abuse or intimate partner violence. Obviously, the most common or the well-known type of abuse is the physical abuse, like battering, hitting, kicking, choking, throwing or destroying property, or striking might be some examples of that physical violence. Or another common type of violence is the sexual abuse. And in sexual abuse, a marital rape or spousal rape is the most severe form of sexual abuse in a relationship. It's the act of sexual intercourse with one's spouse without the spouse's consent. The lack of consent is the essential element and need not involve physical violence in marital rape. And until recently, most legal systems did not consider this being a crime. But now in most of the countries, marital rape is considered to be a criminal act. But it's not limited with marital rape. It might also include sexual acts that humiliate or degrade the wife or the other spouse. Obviously, it doesn't have to be the woman. It can be violence during the sexual act, or it might be sex curing after a physical altercation. Or another type of abuse is emotional abuse, which is maybe the most common type of abuse, but the most difficult one to identify or deal with, because it's not a just simple, calling names type of abuse, but it has far-reaching consequences for the victim and leaves invisible scars that require long-term treatment. For instance, it might cause PTSD, or it might cause mental disabilities. It might be about verbal dominance. It might be isolating the victim, or insulting the victim, creating a guilt for several things like the economical struggles, or the unhappy relationship, or inflicting fear on the victim, or humiliating the victim might be the various indicators of that emotional abuse. And using fear, guilt, and isolation, the abuser try to promote a feeling of helplessness within the spouse, which further ties the victim to the abuser. She believes that there is no way to break the cycle, and she or he usually feels trapped into that relationship. And another aspect of emotional abuse, which can also be examined as a separate type of abuse, is the financial abuse. And in this type of abuse, the abuser may require the spouse to work and return her check over to him, or he or she might be controlling the spouse's bank accounts, or not allow him or her to spend money by himself or herself, and the abuser will control the finances and ensure that the other partner never has any funds that he or she does not approve of. And this financial dependency adds to the spouse's feelings of helplessness and entrapment. Even if he or she wanted to leave, he or she would have no money to support yourself or even rent a room for a night. So this is why, again, this is another reason for victims to remain in an abusive relationship. And lastly, maybe we should talk about the consequences, especially the mental consequences of an abusive relationship. And usually we know that being victimized in an intimate partner relationship causes short and long-term consequences. One of those consequences is mental health issues. And as we noted before, PTSD is just an example of that. And in an upcoming chapter, we will talk more about the mental health related issues or mental health and family violence connection. But rates of anxiety and depression, for instance, are higher among the victims of intimate partner violence. And along with that, women with, or it might have, in addition to mental health issues, violence can also cause physical disabilities, physical consequences, physical trauma, or women with physical disabilities or mental disabilities are going to be much more likely to be victimized or to be abused in a relationship. So in summary, we know that the nature and the extent of partner abuse are staggering. Current figures indicate that women today are being brutalized in alarming numbers in many societies. That's not endemic to the United States or third world countries. In many countries, that's a common problem. And the United Nations have also attempted to work on that, work with the countries to address that issue. And professionals and scholars who study this topic should be aware of the more common and well-known studies of partner abuse that consider social stress, power, dependency, alcohol, pregnancy, marriage, and various correlates of the problem. And unfortunately, there's no set of personality traits that can be listed which will help us to identify who will be an abuser or who will be abused. And even if we do not have an agreement regarding the theories or characteristics of partner abuse, all professionals and scholars acknowledge that there are three basic types of partner abuse. It's physical, sexual, and emotional. And as I said, some people also add on the top of that economical abuse or partner neglect. And this problem is not limited or is not only among the heterosexual couples, but it might also include the same-sex couples. And when it includes same-sex couples, it brings much more complications because there might be discrimination against those people. And that kind of relationships might have their own dynamics, which might not be well known or well studied, and it makes it much more difficult to interfere for the professionals. So in short, we need to know that an important type of family violence is intimate partner and relationship violence. And in the upcoming chapters, we will also talk how this very problem interacts with other types of family violence. Thank you for listening. And I will meet you again in the next episode.